two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
The afternoon insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Hey, thank you for joining us here at KSL News Radio this afternoon. We've got a full slate for you. By the way, tomorrow during this time segment from 12:30 until 3, we're going to have our sports guys in here. And unrivaled, they're going to be in here talking about some of the big sports activities that will be happening, of course, over the Thanksgiving weekend. So this will be kind of my intro into the Thanksgiving weekend. So we may focus a bit on Thanksgiving during the program today. And a part of Thanksgiving, when I was a kid, and we always just said, will we be able to ski by Thanksgiving? Now, back in the day, we weren't quite as reliant, or we didn't have the ability to do as much man-made snow. Now, they did it, certainly, but man, it's down to a fine art now, and almost anything can be open if they're willing to do that. But Annalise Bergen will be joining us, the Director of Communications at Ski Utah. So what's open, what's not, what are some of the things that we should be aware of, what are some of the ski conditions, and boy, after the snow yesterday, boy, talk about a Thanksgiving kiss. That was a good one. So Annalise will join us coming up in just a few moments. I mentioned this last week when we were talking with Vicki Varela, who is the managing director of the Utah Office of Tourism. We were talking about some of the great state parks, all kinds of things, the number of tourist dollars that come to the state of Utah. What a huge part of our economy tourism is. And we're also celebrating the 100th anniversary of Zion National Park. And when Vicki was on, we were talking so much about our state parks and different things that were going on, tourism numbers. We really didn't have a chance to delve into a deep dive into what's happening at Zion National Park, because there are some issues with some of the trails and so on. There's a huge backlog on dollars that should be dedicated to keeping the park up, which unfortunately are backlogged. At this point, we're loving that beautiful park to death is the problem. And so what are some of the plans? We'll talk with Vicki Varela coming up here on KSL News Radio. I'm looking forward to this conversation. This gets into some of the immigration issues. And boy, years ago, I can remember the focus that was on the immigration. And we still have it, certainly, but it's a little different right now. But where states could go with immigration, the feds seem to trump everything, and the Supreme Court has backed that up, that immigration is the purview of the federal government. And so some of the efforts made by states ended up that were signed, passed by legislators, were found to be unconstitutional at the federal level. But what Congressman Curtis and others are calling for is a pilot program. And the title of this is kind of big enough to choke a horse, but it does kind of say it all. It would be a state-sponsored visa pilot program. The Act of 2019 gives states all kinds of flexibility that we do not have now, and especially in light of our governor, Governor Gary Herbert, sending a letter to President Donald Trump saying, hey, look, rather than cutting back on immigrants, Utah wants more. So we'll tie that in as well. And A.J. Smith, Vice President of Financial Education at Smart Asset, will be joining us, because here in the state of Utah, we are renowned throughout the country and even the world for our generosity. We'll be talking about particularly our metro areas here in Utah. What makes Provo, Orem, Ogden, Clearfield, and Salt Lake City so generous? We're going to get into that. Senator Mike Lee will be on the line with us today as well. And boy, he and Senator Ben Sasse, they want the president, they want to really come down hard on the drug cartels. And of course, as if everything that has happened preceding that massacre of the families just across the border, not far from Douglas, Arizona, as a matter of fact, just going a little south, you look at the mayhem, the blood, the carnage, and these two senators are determined to do everything they can to encourage, I mean, harsh sanctions that will truly affect the Mexican drug cartels. So we'll talk with our senior senator, Mike Lee, about that. Scott Howell will be here because Joe Biden is going to be on the ballot here in the state of Utah. We'll get the lowdown and much more, all here at KSL News Radio. Joining us right now, as is tradition, we don't want to give this up for the holidays, certainly.
Never.
Are you going to come in tomorrow and shake down the sports guys?
Oh, I would love to. I don't know if they'll let me. Last week when I was producing for Amy Donaldson and, oh dear, whoever was called. Yeah, Ben Horsley. There we go.
I thought it was Steve Handy.
No, that was the week before. Ben Horsley, yeah. I joked that I am, if you can be tongue-in-cheek Utah's Mr. Sports, I can be even more sarcastically Utah's Mrs. Sports.
Because I like that.
I can talk pointy ball and round orange ball
pointy
and black
ball.
And white ball
little
all day
tiny
long.
Kind of greenish ball.
The greenish one that goes bounce. Yeah. I could grow
you know,
those guys.
Those sports guys are kind of fragile.
They are. We'd have to be really careful.
I know. Be very careful.
I wouldn't want to put them on the spot.
So what have we got going on today?
I was joking earlier that my questions always involve something to do with food because
I've noticed
it's 12:30.
Yeah.
Or 12:40.
I know. Both of us are starving to death here.
Hey, I had some fishy crackers earlier, so I'm doing fine. Mm. All right. There's a whole list out. I don't know if you've seen this, Doug, of foods that are being recalled. So I thought we could go through the list real quick. Tell me if you have these foods in your fridge. If not, you got to kick them out.
As long as they're not recalling the mincemeat that I delivered to my mother last night for the pies that I am anticipating.
No mincemeat.
Good.
Romaine lettuce.
Romaine lettuce.
Out of Salinas, California. Anything. Salinas or Salinas?
I'm not sure. It's Salina. Salinas. We're getting that from the California expert in there.
All right. So anything from that one city there, romaine lettuce, no. Raw pork products, there's some of those that are being recalled. Chicken fried rice, prepackaged, any of that in your freezer?
No.
Okay.
So far, I think I'm okay.
Cheese nibs are being recalled. They found some stuff in one of the boxes.
Stuff in a box.
Like plastic or something.
What about the ones they serve you on the airliner?
Those are Cheez-Its.
Oh, those are Cheez-Its.
And those are the whole wheat Cheez-Its, which are an abomination and should never. I am so disappointed. I love Cheez-Its, but the whole wheat. Okay, cottage cheese.
So what you're saying is the less healthy, the better?
Oh, yeah. No, the whole wheat Cheez-Its are just a weird combination. I get angry every time they give me one of those little packets. I love Cheez-Its, but no.
Okay.
Anyway, so cheese nibs.
Nibs. Okay. No, I'm.
Cottage cheese.
You know, I am not the biggest cottage cheese fan,
well,
so far I'm safe.
The very last one, blackberries.
Ooh.
Certain,
we have blueberries in our fridge right now,
well,
but not blackberries.
The blue is fine. The blackberries, some of them are being recalled.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So look out. There's your list. Romaine lettuce, raw pork products, chicken fried rice, cheese nibs, cottage cheese, and blackberries. Go home today. Make sure you don't have any recalled food products.
So how do we know if our pork products are being recalled?
Google, I suppose.
Google.
Yeah, just Google the name of the company and make sure you don't have the cottage cheese as well. Somebody reported they found some little pieces of red plastic in a cottage cheese container.
Okay, yeah. red plastic.
Keep a lookout.
Sounds
for
like
that.
A part exploded in the processing machine. Okay.
All right, next headline here.
Yes.
This one caught my eye because it starts with the quote, "You'll shoot your eye out."
Oh,
eye
little
injuries,
Ralphie.
Mm-hmm, from paintball and BB guns are on the rise.
Really?
Are you a paintball or a BB gun guy?
No. You know, I was never into paintball. I was just kind of in the wrong era for full tilt paintball. And then BBs, you know, I have this radical thought on BB guns. I think that BB guns are halfway between a real gun and a toy. And that has always bothered me. If it's a real gun, I think certain precautions go along with it. You teach certain things like a .22, you know, rifle, and then... But a BB gun just kind of floats out in the ether.
They can do some damage.
Yeah, I've never been a big fan of BB guns, and I know I'll get hate mail on that. Little Ralphie is riding one right now. But Santa Claus and Mom all agree with me.
But he did just about shoot his eye out.
He did. It was that bounce back, you know, broke his glasses. The old man was upset.
Yeah, I'm the same thing. Airsoft guns, BB guns. I have three sons, and we treat those, you know, we go up to my dad's cabin in Huntsville, and if they shoot the BB gun, it's all the same thing as if they had a rifle in their hands or whatever. We don't mess around because you get one in your eyes, and that's what the thing is. Eye injuries are going up.
Yeah, we had really strict rules in our home. And if we did have like a Nerf gun or something, I mean, if it looks like a gun and it kind of shoots like a gun, but it's still a toy, that always concerns me.
Yeah, so. Our rule in our house is regardless, you never point it at people's faces. I don't care Nerf gun. I don't even care plastic toy gun that can't shoot. You still have the same. We're a little extreme too. I'm with you on this one. All right, Doug, last headline.
Uh-oh.
Did you hear the one about the Chihuahua who drove its owner's SUV?
I thought it was the Chihuahua that went into a bar. No, I
almost.
Didn't. Okay, the Chihuahua did what?
He or she, I actually don't know the gender of the Chihuahua, drove its owner's SUV across a busy Louisiana highway.
Uh-huh.
Go watch this video.
Uh-huh.
It was in the car, jumping around, spazzing out. Owner was getting something at a gas station. It hit the reverse.
Oh, no.
And just across cars or the little Chihuahuas, they have the dash cam on. This isn't a meaty story, but it made me laugh, so I thought I'd bring it to your attention if you haven't seen it.
You know, the Chihuahua endangerment people are going to be all over us on this one.
You know, well, he got a driver's license. Maybe he could get a driver's license and go earn his living, you know?
You never know. Uber.
Right. Yeah, Uber.
Okay, did I pass?
You did. Sorry.
His standards were pretty low today.
I'm going to apologize for that one. There we go.
No. Any story with a Chihuahua backing across a highway is...
Busy highway. Go watch the
video. That's
good
news.
Okay, you're all done.
Thanks,
I'm
Robin. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk with the Director of Communications at Ski Utah, and we're going to take a look at what the ski conditions are for this Thanksgiving weekend. That's coming up next.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Afternoon news and in-depth coverage with Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Okay, fair warning. We've already been passing back the old-timey ski stories here so far. Annalise, I mean, you know, I've already told you my initial run down payday with my high school friends using their old equipment. I call it jungle skiing, and they just took me to the top of the payday lift night ski. It was all ice, and they just said, we'll see you at the bottom.
Well, sounds like a perfect way to learn to me.
Well, if you survive.
If you survive. Nowadays, I guess we have a lot of great resources up at all of the resorts to help us learn not jungle way. But
yeah, that's right. I was telling you, it was Dean Roberts up at Solitude. He was just great. And, you know, he kind of oversaw the care and feeding of my kids on the slopes. And they're all skiers. And they absolutely love skiing. And you know what was fun for me about having kids? It just renews your love of skiing again. You know, as you start to go, well, maybe, you know, well, whatever. And then, but then when your kids are skiing, wow. You know?
The pure joy on their faces is just something you just can't replace it with any other material item. To see your kid happy in the snow, I don't know if there's anything like it.
Are you ready for another old-timing ski story?
I will never tire of them.
Okay. You could always tell who was skiing at Alta by just looking at their gloves. If their left glove was torn all to pieces, you knew that they skied Alta because of the tow ropes and everything that would take you over to Albion Basin.
Yeah.
And you could always tell if somebody had a torn up left glove, you knew that they'd recently
been
over to Alta.
The mark of the Alta skier.
It was the mark of the Alta is for skiers. Okay, Annalise, there really is a purpose other than just commiserating, and I've told all my old stories. Do you want to tell any of yours?
I don't have any significantly old stories that I can think of.
Old becomes relative, right?
I think that most of my stories are kind of like the fishing stories where you talk about the biggest powder
it
day of your life.
Big.
It was this deep.
Yeah.
But, you know, those are all real stories, and they're all at some of the best days of my life right here in Utah.
Isn't it incredible? There's nothing like being in a high bowl when powder and just... Wow.
I can't think of anything to be more thankful for this week than living right here in Utah and skiing this snow in Utah.
Annalise, of course, is the Director of Communications for Ski Utah. And let's get an overview. Yesterday, man, I mean, that was something that back in the day, because we would just pray for snow for Thanksgiving, and that was the acid test of how the season was going to be. If you could ski natural snow on Thanksgiving, all was good in the universe.
I like to think that way. We have so many resorts that are going to be opening through the week. Two are already open. I skied both of them last week. Brighton opened on Tuesday last week.
Yeah.
Park City opened on Friday. And then we have Alta, Snowbird, and Solitude opening this Friday. And then Snow Basin opening on Saturday. And then just more coming down the line through early December. So through this weekend, there's going to be plenty of skiing, and holy cow, winter is here.
Yeah. Any idea how much snow we got yesterday at the resorts?
It depends on which resort you're looking at. I know Snowbird, I believe, reported around 11 inches. Bryanhead got a whopping 16 inches in the last 24 hours, so I'm sure they are enjoying it down there.
You know, I'm a relatively recent convert to Bryanhead. When my son Ian was going to school at SUU, all of a sudden, you know, I discovered Bryanhead. And, oh, my goodness, I love skiing Bryanhead.
It's really a special place, and it's somewhere that you just wouldn't expect to see down there. And it's, you know, it's a different kind of skiing, a little bit off the beaten path, a different experience than what you might have up here on the Wasatch Front or the back. But it's a really special place down there. And, man, when they get that good dry powder, it is good.
So they got 16 inches.
Yes.
Wow. What about some of the northern resorts? How are they doing?
They're doing really well. And, you know, this forecast is we actually just put up a really great blog post from Evan Thayer with Wasatch Snow Forecast, and we are looking at like 1 to 3 feet out of the storm. Everybody from north to south is looking really happy and really, really good, and lots more openings ahead.
You know, we talked about how spectacular last season was. It was really quite amazing. And didn't we set records for, you know, number of ski trips and everything else?
Big records. We had over 5.1 million skier visits last year. You know, I was just on the radio up here last week, and we were talking about the economic impact of that, too. Last winter, it was $1.6 billion was the estimated economic impact of our ski industry here in Utah. So not only do we get to enjoy the actual powder turns, but we get to enjoy the fruit of that income of people coming to see our greatest snow.
How are the new management and the new ownerships of the resorts working? My kids, for example, especially my son Ian and my daughter-in-law Tyra, they buy the pass every year, and they've had passes, you know, going back to the good old days when they were in very young. You could buy a $100 pass and they could ski all they wanted up at Park City and elsewhere. But now they can ski everywhere with this Epic Pass. It's incredible. And out of state, too.
Yeah, I mean, you can ski all over the world with these passes. So we have two resorts here in Utah on the Epic Pass. Snow Basin is on it, and Park City is on Epic. And then Icon, I mean, we have a ton of resorts here on Icon, including Snowbird, Alta, Solitude, Brighton, Deer Valley, and then resorts all over the world with that pass as well. So those are an incredible way to access the mountains. And then if you're talking about young kids getting out on the snow, don't forget to go to skiutah.com if you have a fifth or sixth grader, because the passport is the deal of the century. These are the kind of old school deals that you're talking about.
Yeah, what is the deal for those kids?
The fifth grade passport and the sixth grade passport, they're only $45. The fifth grade allows you to ski 3 days at each of the 15 resorts. So that's 45 ski days for $45.
I thought I was making the killing of the century for the $100 that we used to spend for our kids.
Yeah, so that's an incredible deal. If you have a fifth or sixth grader, the sixth grader is 1 day at each resort, but the fifth grader is 3 days at each resort, and those are on sale all winter long. You don't even have to be a Utah student to get those. So we really like to make it accessible for the kids and get families up into the mountains.
Which of the passes include Sun Valley, because that's the one that my kids have. I'm confused now whether they have the Icon or the Epic, because they said, you know, I used to do all the voice work for the Sun Valley Lodge years and years and years ago, and we just trade it, you know. So I'd go up and I'd you know, when we were poor as church mice, we'd go up there and just sign for everything. It was great. But so we usually do a pilgrimage in the fall to Sun Valley. And this year, my kids said, hey, look, let's go up in the wintertime because our pass includes Sun Valley and they want to do some serious skiing up there.
It's the Epic Pass.
The Epic Pass
includes Sun Valley. So you can ski Deer Valley and Snow Basin here. And then, yeah, you could go up to Sun Valley or really almost anywhere in the world with that pass, which is it's really special. I think the greatest snow is here.
Yeah. I agree.
No reason to really travel anywhere when you live right here in Utah. But these passes are making it easy to see the world and come right back home to the greatest snow on earth.
My wife is from Missouri, and it always would drive me crazy when her cousins would fly to Denver and they'd ski in Colorado. And I go, what is wrong with you? Stay on the plane for 50 more minutes, be up at the resort so much faster than if you landed over in Denver, and you'll be skiing better snow, you'll be skiing cheaper, you'll have a better experience. And maybe it was this part that scared them off. I said, and you can stay with us. That might have just scared them. No, we're going to Denver.
Yeah, maybe that's what it did. Yeah, yeah. I can't imagine why anyone could pass up Utah. We have 15. Yeah. We'll have 15 resorts here. As you know, our newest resort is opening this December, Woodward Park City, which is going to be unlike anything else in the world.
Now, tell us exactly where is that? Is that on the Jordanelle side?
So when you're driving over to Park City, right when you pass the summit, it's right there on your right-hand side where there used to be only a tubing hill there.
I see. It used to be Gorgoza.
Yep. Gorgoza tubing. And they still will have tubing. It'll actually be the longest tubing lanes in the state, which is really exciting. But what's really exciting about this facility, it's a part of the Woodward brand, which is owned by Powder.
Right.
And they have an all-in-one action sports indoor facility and ski resort open 365 days a year.
Wow.
Opening this December, I wish I was 14 again because they have everything: skateboarding, parkour, trampoline, snowboarding, skiing, 22-foot half pipe, all the way just to learning how to even get on a snowboard at all. You want to talk about a different learning experience that either of us ever had.
Yeah.
It is Woodward Park City.
The reason I asked about the other side by Jordanelle, kind of over there, the Deer Valley side, up by Mayflower, I keep hearing rumblings. And last time I put the bite on somebody to explain that, they basically clamped right up.
There's just not that much information about it yet. Yeah. As much as I wish I didn't have to clamp up, I just don't have much information on it yet. But yeah, it is right on the Jordanelle side, close to Deer Valley. And we'll just have to wait to see what that turns into.
Annalise, this has been fun. Thank you. And thank you for putting up with my old stories. I didn't even tell you the J-Bar stories.
I'll listen to them anytime.
Yeah, J-Bar at Park City. I've got, we'll go there another time, another place. How do people get all the information? What's the website?
You have to go to skiutah.com or download the Ski Utah app, and you can even get Powder alerts every day from that. It's the best way to find the transportation, all the right passes, all the good stuff. SkiUtah.com.
Annalise, have a great Thanksgiving and a great ski season.
You too.
Okay, we're at 1 o'clock. Let's take a break and we'll come right back, and we're going to be talking with Vicki Varela, the managing director of the Utah Office of Tourism.
Insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
A little while back, we were talking with Vicki Varela. You may recall this conversation, and we were talking about tourism in the state of Utah, just how important it is to our economy, some of the spectacular numbers. We were talking about our state parks. We were talking about our national parks. And we, at that time, said, you know, we really ought to set aside a little more time to talk about the 100-year anniversary of Zion National Park here in the state, not only because it is such a spectacular park and arguably the best known and certainly the most visited national park in the state of Utah, but also the loving it to death factor that we alluded to. And there are some real issues when it comes to Zion National Park. And joining us on the line again is Vicki Varela. Vicki, thank you so much for joining us once again, kind of for part two of our conversation.
Yes, great to be with you, Doug.
What, as we celebrate this amazing park, and again, I think of the Mighty Five, it is certainly the best known, the one that probably everybody in China and Japan and Germany and everybody else, if they come to Utah and if the Mighty Five are on their agenda, that's probably the one that is on the tip of their tongue. How popular is this park?
Well, people really like it, and they have been coming in the millions for many years. And you're right, the Mighty Five campaign dramatically impacted those numbers to where we were having double-digit increases in visitation. Just in the last couple of years, the increase in visitation has flattened out. In fact, visitation went down just a little bit in 2018. We think that's related to the stories about congestion at the national park. Some safety issues. It's a 15-mile corridor through a canyon, and so they have lots of challenges with periodic rock slides and so forth. And so there were at times that roads were closed, and that impacted visitation as well.
Sure.
But 4.4 million people in 2018. So that's a lot of people experiencing the wonders of our state.
Well, it certainly is. When we were chatting last week or whenever it was, we talked about this is not necessarily a bad thing. Having a plateau here is probably a really good thing, especially in light of the fact that the attendance in our state parks is up quite dramatically. And as we alluded to then, you know, many states would just, you know, be head over heels to have one of our state parks as a national park in their backyard. They are truly incredible.
Exactly. We're actually pleased to see things flattening out at the national parks while our state park visitation is growing dramatically, 18% growth at the state parks last year, almost flat with the national parks.
Yeah.
That works really well because our state parks are able to invest in recreational infrastructure and provide that quality experience that, like you say, it would be like a national park in other states, many of our state parks. So the superintendent at Zion, I think one of the best conversations that he and I have had is about the flattened flattened growth in visitation, because he's working really hard to manage that experience so that it's wonderful for every visitor and for the local community, and we absolutely support him in that.
Absolutely, and I keep reading about the backlogs of work that needs to be done, maintenance backlog in the park alone that is $70 million, some of the trails that need the refurbishing. And I like, too, I was reading an article in the Deseret News by Amy Joy Donahue, and she talked about how the experts in the park say, look, you know, this park has been evolving. There have been slides. There have been all kinds of things since the beginning of time. And anybody who thinks it's now just frozen in time for our convenience, trust me, these slides and different things, the adjustment of the lands and the landscape will continue on. That's what made the park so spectacular. And just because we now, in a very short period of time, have learned to love it and revere it, doesn't mean it's never going to change or inconvenience us.
Exactly. We see our responsibility really in two parts. One is obviously making sure that we're sending the right messages to our visitors about when to visit, about how they should prepare themselves so they visit. We have shifted our strategies over the last couple of years so that a big part of our marketing now is going to educating the visitors who have already booked a room. We can tell they booked a hotel room, and so we want to make sure that they arrive well-prepared to have the right kind of experience so that they're safe and so they minimize their impact on the environment. And then we want to make sure that they visit at the right time of the year, on the shoulder seasons where the parks are less visited, even in the winter. Some of our friends say that the only thing that makes Bryce Canyon better is a little snow on top. It's
Isn't
like icing
true?
On the cake.
It is. It's like frosting.
Yeah, it's frosting on the cake. But then another huge part of our responsibility is stewardship, is getting the federal government to invest in the infrastructure backlog at the parks. And so I spend quite a bit of time in D.C. advocating for investment. I just met last week with the acting superintendent of the national parks, and we exchanged notes about the funding needs and how we might persuade Congress to start investing in those needs. I also talked with him about visitor use management, about ways that the parks can use the tools of technology to better help the visitor get to the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. And just one example, we've all gone into the national parks and seen the backlog just to get through the gate. We would love to see all of that done through technology, the way we do most of our, almost everything we do now is through technology. Yeah. And so we would like to see them have better tools of technology to help us navigate into the park and then to the right destinations in the park. It would be so great if there were information available through technology about whether there's a way to Angel's Landing and whether there are other spectacular trails that are available that people could be redirected to.
I'm sure it would take some creativity, but both you and I will remember the days when there was a big movie, The Empire Strikes Back, Indiana Jones, whatever it might be, and you would stand in line for hours. Lines around the center theater would be, 2.5 blocks long. And now there are no lines. Everybody just goes online. You get your tickets. You've got your reserved spot. And it just makes all the difference in the world. And I know they're already using some of those technologies for special permitting and so on. But, boy, I agree with you. I think the technology could make a huge, huge difference. Vicki, for people who want more information about our national parks, and what would you recommend if they want to kind of, okay, when is the down season? When is the hot season? When can we go? What would you recommend?
Come to visitutah.com. And all the information is available there to help you have the right kind of experience at the right time of year.
Visitutah.com. That's great.
Hey, Doug, I've got one more amazing thing I want to tell you about Zion, if we have a minute.
Sure.
Imagine a 100-year-old national park that is beloved all over the world, and now imagine a new east gateway to that park that is thought through in a sustainable way, that has a visitor center and trails and a welcoming statement that I think is going to be one of the most spectacular national park access points in the United States.
Wow.
That's all being planned right now on the east side of Zion National Park.
Is there a target date?
They haven't set a date for completion because they're in the planning stages right now, but it is so inspiring the way that a local community and some private developers are coming together along with Zion National Park to create a vision of something that is going to be unparalleled anywhere in the United States.
Vicki, you've got to keep me in the loop on that, okay?
I will.
All right. You know, my son used to work at Zion Ponderosa Ranch over there on the east side, and I'm trying already to conjure up what that might be like. Vicki, thank you so much for joining us today here at KSL, and have a great, great Thanksgiving.
Thanks so much, Doug.
Vicki Varela with us, and she is the Managing Director of the Utah Office of Tourism here at KSL News Radio. Representative John Curtis will be joining us next. We're going to talk about the state-sponsored Visa Pilot Program Act of 2019.
More afternoon news and in-depth coverage with Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation because I wanted to get more information about the idea of having visas that have so much more flexibility in them here in the state of Utah. And it's called the State-Sponsored Visa Pilot Program Act of 2019. And this is something that our representative in the 3rd Congressional District has been working on. And John Curtis, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, Doug, always good to talk to you.
Tell us about the act and what motivated it, where did it come from, and then we'll talk about what it will do.
Well, I have felt for a long time that it just was a huge mistake to have the federal government totally in control of our destiny in Utah. And, of course, the federal government has responsibility for immigration, but there's no reason they can't delegate portions of that. And when I heard this idea, I just loved it. We embraced it and introduced a bill. It really gives the state flexibility to create a program specifically designed to Utah's needs rather than a one-size-fits-all coming from Washington.
Now, back in the day, we tried something. It was Governor Herbert who signed a guest worker bill into law, and unfortunately, it didn't hold up. It was overturned, and this would have allowed some of the flexibility that this act would?
Exactly. So really the difference is really good intentions, but that started at a state level, and we really need to start this at a federal level and give the state the authority to do that.
I was reading that basically up until now, almost anything a state tries to do, like we did, can be just shut down by the U.S. Supreme Court because they've upheld the federal law regulating immigration, and they've blocked states from doing things exactly like this.
That's correct, and that's why, I mean, we can delegate that authority, which is what this bill would do, so we have that authority, but we have not yet done that, so the states haven't had that ability.
So what has to happen here, and is President Trump likely to sign something like this, especially since Governor Herbert, not that long ago, sent him a letter saying, hey, look, rather than cutting back on the immigrants that we allow in and so on, refugees that we allow in, how about if you expand that, because in Utah we need them?
And that's the exact point. This bill gives states the ability to opt in or opt out. So if they feel like they don't want more, they don't have to do that. They don't have to use the power this bill gives them. But states like Utah that desperately need help have the ability to have that flexibility.
Is the president sympathetic to this, do you believe?
I don't dare speculate on that. And all I can hope is that if we could get some momentum behind it in the House, that I think it would have a good chance in the Senate. And then we could have that conversation. And so much of this is political, let's admit it. But a good showing in the House and the Senate would go a long ways towards getting president support.
Representative John Curtis on the line with us talking about the act. And who is on board? I can't imagine that this wouldn't be bipartisan.
Well, that's our hope, because if it's not bipartisan, it ultimately won't be successful. And right now, we're looking around trying to find a co-sponsor that's a Democrat, hopefully from a prominent somebody on the committee of jurisdiction. And we haven't secured that yet. We've just introduced the bill, and that's our next step. And then if we can get that, everything goes downhill from there as far as getting other Republicans and Democrats on the bill.
Well, here in the state of Utah, you've sure got the support all the way to the governor himself. You've got the president of the Salt Lake Chamber. You've got the president of the Utah Farm Bureau Federation. I talked with Ron Gibson just a week or so ago when they were anticipating their state convention. And, boy, they had a lot of things on their plate that are kind of universal to all of us, but specific in their needs to the farm community. And it seems to me the farm community, construction, everything really could use this.
Oh, the list is endless. I hear almost weekly from somebody, construction, hospitality, agriculture. There's so many industries, and with these jobs going unfulfilled, it's a serious impediment to their ability to be successful.
If I'm understanding this this act correctly, it not only would provide the workers but expand what they could do. I know in some of your comments you've talked about, you know, these lines that are on maps that you cannot cross. Well, business does cross it. Agriculture crosses it. Construction crosses it. Migrant workers need to cross it as the job demands. How flexible would this make Utah with even our surrounding states?
That's one of the beauties of the bill. It allows states to work together in a compact and share visas. So hypothetically, let's suppose Colorado had a seasonal need, and we had a seasonal need that didn't directly conflict with theirs. We could actually share workers back and forth across state lines. And you're right, if a particular business needed to have access across state lines, this would allow for that flexibility. So it really puts the powers in the states to control their destiny.
I remember the conversations on immigration, you know, they kind of hit a peak maybe, back in the Utah Compact era, and just how hot this topic was. And it was so interesting that even some of the most conservative members of the Utah State Legislature were absolutely supporting reforms because they were in businesses where they knew how important these migrant workers were, whether it was like David Europe in Summit County, or whether it was somebody like Leonard Blackham, who was so immersed in agriculture. All of them were saying, we need these workers. And if we don't have these workers, your agriculture prices go up, your construction prices go up, or in some cases, even halt. And when you get the enthusiasm of somebody like Ron Gibson, who says we are in desperate need of visa reform, you get the governor who is saying he would jump at the opportunity to have this visa work program. It sounds like there's some momentum.
Absolutely. And I think another thing that's important is that when we don't have a legal program, they come illegally. The demand is so strong. And so this actually facilitates legal access to these jobs, giving people a reasonable way where they can come legally, pay taxes, work hard, obey our laws, and everything is good about that.
John, I so appreciate you joining us. Thank you for taking the time to talk about the act, and I'll look forward to hearing more about it, and I hope that you and yours, I hope you have a great, great Thanksgiving.
Thanks, and to you as well, and all your great listeners. Thanks, Doug.
Thank you. Representative John Curtis, representing the 3rd Congressional District here in the state of Utah, giving us a little more background on the state-sponsored Visa Pilot Program Act of 2019. We're at 1:30. Let's take a break, and when we come back, much more in store. Plus, I want to talk about an interesting poll that shows that Utahns, they certainly like the direction of our state versus the direction of our country. That's coming up. Stay with us.
More afternoon news and in-depth coverage with Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Coming up in a few moments, we're going to talk with A.J. Smith, the Vice President of Financial Education at Smart Asset. And the reason we're going to be talking with him, well, it's because Utah cities or areas, we hold the top 3 where Americans give the most to charity. It really is quite remarkable. There's nobody even really close to our top 3 areas, cities here in the state. But before we talk with A.J. Smith, I wanted to talk with you for just a moment about a survey that I saw. I saw this on Utah Policy, and it shows that Utahns, by and large, are so much more comfortable with the direction of our state versus the direction of our country. I'd like your thoughts on that. I'll walk you through some of the numbers, but it's basically 60% are saying that in Utah, we are in the right direction. It's actually 59%. 59% say we're going in the right direction. 41% say, no, wrong direction. Almost exactly the opposite when Utahns look at the nation itself. 36% are saying that our nation is going in the right direction. 64% say that we are not. And it's interesting when we break down that number even more. Self-identified strong Republicans say the country is headed in the right direction by 69% to 31% margin. Now, those are the self-identified strong Republicans. And in many cases, honestly, that would indicate support. The survey shows this, support of President Donald J. Trump. Now, with moderate Republicans, things change dramatically. Now, remember, with the strong Republicans, it's 69-31, moderate Republicans say now the country's going in the wrong direction, 62% to 38. Independents who lean Republican, it's basically the same, 58 to 42. Independents and Democrats overwhelmingly believe the country is on the wrong track. When I saw this, I thought, you know, this is interesting. Now, I know some of it is general skepticism about federal government in general, states' rights, things like that. I think President Trump is playing a strong factor in this, especially for Democrats and independents that lean Democrat. But it's also showing up in moderate Republicans and independents who lean Republican. I'd really like to hear from you on this, and you can do so on our Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line. And you can also, of course, call us and leave a voice message on this one at 575-7668, 801-575-7668. I'd really like your thoughts on this. Why do you think, and maybe you could identify, I think we're going in the wrong direction because of this, or country-wise. I feel that our country is going in the right direction because of this. I'd really like to see your thinking on this. And I have to admit, I would fall in the category that feels that our country right now, in many ways, is going in the wrong direction. And I think, for me, that would filter down to a lot of things. I think the way we are just absolutely shaking. Now, occasionally shaking things up is a good thing. But you need to do that with an eye on how this is going to affect the long game of your policies and your stability and your safety in your country. I think right now the United States is freaking out. Longtime allies. I think it's not just because we're asking more of them. It's not just because we're saying, hey, pay your fair share of NATO. Hey, look, you know, this is out of balance. I think people get that. But I think it's the back and forth and the erratic nature that is associated with that. And honestly, and I'll use the B word on this, the bullying that goes along with that. You know, you can win as a bully, but it's almost always short term. You win long term by, yes, being assertive, yes, being forceful, yes, twisting a few arms every now and then, but with your stability, and when those that you are trying to bring to your side, you assure them that this isn't just in our best interest, it's in your best interest. And I think that's why, fortunately, in the United States over the years, we have had many presidents who have such enormous respect, and the country has such enormous respect around the world, that when we need something, as George Herbert Walker Bush did in Operation Desert Storm, and you look at the coalition that was put together there, and the allies, even some that were a little sketchy maybe, said, yeah, no, you know, you were there for us, we'll be there for you on that. It concerns me. It really does. So I have to admit, if I had filled out this survey, I would have been in the same category. I would have said, no, the country, I think overall, there are some things, and certainly we're still, and I've always disliked this slogan, make America great again. It's as I've said over and over and over, yeah, on our worst day, this is the greatest nation on the face of the earth. I believe this is the nation that has done more good overall for not just our people, but all peoples in the world. On our worst day, we are great. Can we be greater? Yes. That's what our Constitution tells us to do, to become a more perfect union, a more perfect union. That should always be the goal. That should always be the long game, to work not only to make this nation a more perfect union, but to make this a more perfect world that this nation thrives in. And I think that that goal that we have had, and I think many people who even dislike us have a begrudging respect for that. They may disagree with our religion. They may disagree with capitalism, our religions, which is the fortunate thing here in America. But I'd be curious for you. I'm concerned about the long game. I think we are precarious there. I think that long-term allies who still are supporting us, but I think it's shakier than it used to be. I think some of the erraticism that is freaking out not only Americans, I think it's really freaking out some of our allies. I think some of the short-term thinking is distressing me quite a bit. I think, well, the list goes on. Here in the state of Utah, on the other hand, I would agree with this survey. I think Utah is headed in the right direction. I think there are some needs, and I think our former Lieutenant Governor Greg Bell laid this out very, very well in an op-ed piece a little while ago. That's why I invited him on to chat about it, that our biggest problems are really kind of our successes. The fact that we're doing so well in the state of Utah, that now we're worried about the infrastructure. We're worried about capacity. We are worried about air pollution. We're worried about, you know, some of the basics, water, clean water, and so on, that are all problems that come with really good things. Some just handling the traffic, handling the population of Utah, the greatest amount, even back in the day with Governor Leavitt, he used to point this out, that if you're complaining about growth in the state of Utah, we're 80% of it is coming right from our own families. It's our kids. It's our grandkids. It's our great-grandkids. It's our kids coming home after perhaps they've worked outside of the state of Utah for a while. So it's interesting that most of the challenges that we are facing right now that are on the high priority list for our legislators, for our politicians, for our local folks, for our various activism groups, most of the things that we are focusing on as problems are actually kind of byproducts of our great successes. So anyway, I'd like to hear from you. If you have a thought on this, would you or would you not come down in which category? You know, would you come down in the category that is saying, Doug, you're up in the night. Come on, give me a break. You know, the United States, we are absolutely on the right path right now. Or maybe you're one, like me, who agrees no. And again, while not taking anything away from this great nation, I think that right now there are many things about our country, the civility that we show one another, the politics being so partisan. I've never seen it quite this partisan in my lifetime. I think the way we communicate with one another, I think of some of the problems that we have. I think there is much we could do to improve the direction of the United States. And then here in the state of Utah, I think, yeah, we are. Now, because of our successes, though, we need to be very, very careful about some of the paths and the directions we take in the state of Utah to make sure that we focus on some of these negative byproducts of such great success. I know that's kind of a weird way of putting it, but that's exactly what's happening. So I want to hear from you. And you can do so on our Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line at 57500. And you can also leave us a voice message at area code 801-575-7668. All right, when we come back, and again, I think this is one of the things that makes truly Utah a great, great place, is the generosity, the volunteerism, everything of the state of Utah. And boy, there are some national numbers now that prove that to be correct. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Hey, don't forget, you can take KSL wherever you go. Listen live and on demand. Download the KSL News Radio app. It's powered by Any Hour Services. I was looking over this, the results of a survey that indicates what metro area is the most generous in the state of Utah. In the country. And the number one area is the Provo-Orem area of the Beehive State, where the percent of tax returns with charitable contributions is at 34.98%. The charitable contributions as a percent of income, 6.91%. Are you wondering what's second? It's Ogden-Clearfield at 33.05% of returns and 4.71% charitable contributions percent of income. And coming in third is Salt Lake City with 29.88% of returns and 4.9% of income. We have invited a special guest to join us, A.J. Smith, Vice President of Financial Education at Smart Asset. And A.J., welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
How long have these surveys been going on? Now, what I'm looking for is to compare apples to apples. For example, how did Utah do last year?
You know, this is the first edition with this methodology of this study that we've done. We looked at these particular metrics, these five different metrics across 200 metro areas, the 200 largest metro areas by population.
So run us through. What are the five matrix that will get Provo-Orem at the very, very top?
Absolutely. We looked at information coming to us from the IRS and also information coming to us from nationalservice.gov, We looked at the number of charitable contributions as a percentage of income. We looked at the percentage of tax returns that show charitable donations on them. Then we looked at the average charitable contribution amount. In addition, we looked at volunteer rates. Are people giving of their time as well as of their money? And then the hours spent per volunteer. Those were the five metrics we looked across all 200 of those metro areas.
This is really fascinating that in such a concentrated area, and I don't know how familiar you are with Utah, but this is basically the Upper Wasatch Front, the central part of the Wasatch Front that runs basically from the Provo-Orem area up to the Ogden area. It's kind of one continuous big population, and it's amazing that there is so much concentrated right here along our Wasatch Front. Are there any other areas of the country where there are kind of sister cities and things, areas that have things in common that kind of herd together?
You know, not nearly as close as you mentioned, the three areas in Utah, but we did notice that, you know, some areas in the South and the West were well represented in our top 10. We saw, some places like Charlottesville, Virginia, looking at Raleigh, North Carolina, Baltimore, Columbia, the Towson, Maryland area, in addition to Chapel Hill and the Charlotte area coming in, in our top 10 in the study. So we did see some clustering, but certainly the Utah area, by far the most concentrated.
It's interesting, too, because we have a lot of connections with Idaho here in Utah, and our friends up in Boise, they did well as well. They came in number 7.
They did, yes.
Do you dig into any of the other facts? Do you take into consideration, for example, religious affiliation, or is there anything else that kind of plays into this equation?
So we didn't. We looked specifically at these five different metrics. And one of the things we hope people take away from it is, you know, we are a data-focused company. We use data to help people make good financial goals and then start acting on them. So we have our calculators and our tools that help you figure out how much house you can afford, how much money you need to save for retirement, those sorts of things. And then we also use data to power studies like this to get people thinking, are they happy with the amount they're giving to charity? Taking a look at, you know, the amount that other people are giving can help you look at your numbers, look at your budget, see what amount you're giving to charity. Is it a number you're comfortable with? Is it something you'd like to improve in the coming year? And certainly this time of year, I think, is when people start to think about that. You know, the Thanksgiving, they're feeling thankful, the holidays coming up, and we have Giving Tuesday is a day when people are encouraged to donate to charities. So we really hope that people will look at this and see which cities do well, but also look at it on a personal level and see, are they happy with where they stand?
It's interesting. Our governor was a county commissioner prior to being lieutenant governor of the state and then ascended to the governor's seat, and he lives in the Provo-Orem area. So I'm sure our governor today, Gary Herbert, would be very proud of these numbers, and it's across the board with Provo-Orem. They are number one in every single category.
And I think that is certainly something to be proud of, and it's a list you want to be at the top of. You want to look around at your neighbors and feel proud that it's a community value for sure.
I notice there are 25 on the list that I'm looking at. Do you go deeper than that?
So we do. We looked at the 200 metro areas by population all across the U.S.
As far as those that perhaps for whatever reason it may be, are in the lower levels of the charitable contributions, are there economic factors that come to play? Are they generally in a more, say, for example, a depressed area?
You know, we didn't dive into anything beyond the five metrics when it comes to this,
right,
this situation. You know, for this specific study, we looked at those numbers. We didn't look at median income. We didn't look at poverty rate levels. That would certainly be something interesting to look into. You know, is there a correlation there? Are these people who, you know, are not able to give if they fall low on this list? And certainly not something we want to hold against people who are struggling with. But we were looking particularly at these numbers to celebrate kind of where are people, you know, contributing. And again, we do look at the charitable contributions as a percent of income. So this is people, you know, there might be some states where there's larger, or some metro areas where there are larger amounts of money being given. This is compared to income.
It truly is interesting, and I've really enjoyed looking this over. And I'm assuming this is kind of the maiden launch of this. This will come out again next year?
Absolutely. You know, I think any time we can be encouraging people to take a look at their financial goals, and you know, certainly when we talk about those, people mention things like owning a home, people mention things like retirement, but people mention things like giving back as well, you know, as a reason for wanting to succeed and wanting to, you know, be ambitious when it comes to their careers. And so I think it is a great thing to actually look at the numbers, you know, where are people putting their money where their mouth is.
AJ, I really appreciate you joining us. This was really interesting. Thank you. And of course, it's particularly nice that we have the top three slots all locked down here in the state of Utah. AJ Smith, Vice President of Financial Education at Smart Asset, joining us here at KSL News Radio, where it is 2:00. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Senator Mike Lee. He'll be calling in. We're going to talk about the Mexican drug cartels and what we can do, how we can basically punish them. Coming up next.
The afternoon insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
I'm very pleased to have Senator Mike Lee joining us on the program today. Senator, it's always good to chat with you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Doug. Good to be with you.
Well, this is such a big issue and such an important issue for everybody who respects decency in any way, shape, or form, but especially for the people here in the state of Utah and other places in the country as well that had direct ties to these women and children that were massacred down just across the border, not far from Douglas, Arizona, not very long ago. And there was such confusion at first. And Mike, I heard people saying, well, they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. It appears more and more that that isn't the case. What do we know at this point regarding the Mexican drug cartels and this massacre?
Yeah, Doug, it really is a tragedy. I've been in regular contact with members of the family of the victims. I've had a lot of conversations with Kenny Miller Sr., who is the father-in-law of the mother of four who was killed along with her four children. And it is absolutely tragic. We still don't know a lot. One of the things we do know, one of the things of which we are most confident, is that this wasn't crossfire. This does not appear to me to have been accidental. This was, I believe, undertaken by a drug cartel in Mexico, and it was done deliberately, with knowledge that they were killing women and children, and likely with knowledge that these were people with significant ties to the United States who happened to be dual citizens, dual U.S. and Mexican citizens. I believe it probably has something to do with a territorial dispute between gangs. Now, what they had to gain by killing 9 innocent women and children is still beyond my ability to understand. But we're unraveling it bit by bit and doing everything we can to hold these cartels accountable.
Boy, very few things in recent memory have been quite this shocking. And, you know, no matter what kind of activity occurred or motivation occurred, there is pretty cold comfort in thinking, well, this was an accident. But it makes it even worse for them to target these individuals, especially when there's nothing very obvious as to why. I'm curious as to why Senator Ben Sasse is on board with this one, other than the fact that he's just a good, decent person who cares. Does he have any ties on this?
I believe there is one of the victims who had some ties to Nebraska, but Senator Ben Sasse is also just very conscientious. He's somebody who follows U.S. national security issues very closely. He serves on the Intelligence Oversight Committee and is constantly on the lookout for possible threats to American national security. That's another reason why he was very interested in this. We've also had Senator Kevin Cramer for North Dakota, who's been in regular contact with the Miller family. Kenny Miller Jr., the husband of the mother of four children who was killed with her four children, is a constituent of his, and he's been very involved in this as well.
All of you have been urging at the highest levels, Secretary Mnuchin, Secretary Pompeo, and Director Ray to use the tools that are available. And honestly, I was not very aware of some of this, the Kingpin Act, the Global, and is it Magnitsky? Human Rights Accountability Act, to use those two in their, and I like this term, in the most effective and creative ways to basically punch back at the cartels. What do you envision?
Well, there's a lot of things we can do. The Kingpin Act allows the government to block property interests, property within the United States or within the possession or control of any U.S. person that happened to be owned or controlled by a significant narcotics trafficking entity, as identified by the president. So that by itself gives some pretty significant authority. The Global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act goes even further and allows the president to either block or revoke visas from certain foreign persons, or even to impose property sanctions against them. So that can run a wide range between blocking their admissibility, excluding them from the United States if they're already here, or in many cases in engaging in economic sanctioning activities where we block their ability to undertake financial transactions using the U.S. banking system, things like that. These can really hurt. These are major businesses. We're talking about, in some cases, many tens of billions of dollars a year undertaken by some of these cartels. And that money has to go somewhere, and there are ways if the FBI and the Treasury Department and the Department of Homeland Security look hard enough and are creative enough with these two statutes, there's a lot they could do to make life difficult for the cartels.
Senator, are you convinced or are you hopeful that there really will be extremely high-level, serious action from our government? Even President Trump, the day that this happened, was talking about and tweeting out what an atrocity this was. But both you and I have seen this over the years where there is that initial shock and then sometimes things tend to fade into the woodwork. Do we have the will to do this?
Oh, I believe we do. Now, I'm not going to take anything for granted. That's why I sent this letter yesterday to the FBI, to Homeland Security, and to the Treasury Secretary. We can't take anything for granted, but I am convinced that we've got the will to do something. I heard late at night, in the middle of the night, from the National Security Advisor at the White House that this attack had taken place. Early the next morning, I got a phone call from the president. President Trump himself called me. Vice President Pence called me a couple of hours later. I can tell you, Doug, I've never seen the president more upset than I did after this took place. And I know he's got a number of people within the White House, the Justice Department, the Treasury Department, and the Homeland Security Department looking at this, working on it. And there will be consequences to the cartels for this action, and those consequences will be grave.
When the president
of when, not if, these happen.
I was going to say, when the president initially reacted to this, boy, he was using terms like war. We will send troops. Talk to the president of Mexico saying, you need help, you got it. Do you think that things like that might actually happen?
Well, I think we should be prepared for them to happen if they need to. We've got to remember the severity of this. We've gone to war half a world away again and again for things that present a lot less of a clear and present threat to American national security than this one. But we've got to be prepared, particularly if this starts to get worse, and if Mexico actually becomes a failed state, that could present a grave humanitarian and national security crisis for the United States. And we've got to be prepared for that. I also spoke to the Mexican ambassador to the United States, Martha Barcena, who I've gotten to know over the last year or so since the López Obrador administration came to power in Mexico. She was obviously very concerned. There are big issues in Mexico dealing with sovereignty. They're always very concerned. After President Trump offered military assistance, President López Obrador was eager to say, yeah, we'll take some of the law enforcement advisory and investigative assistance, and we'd rather not take any military assistance. This is an issue that needs to be addressed. And we could reach a point where this ends up presenting a security threat to the United States. And President López Obrador has got to understand that.
You know, I appreciate you mentioning that, Senator, because when you think of not just this incident, but you think of the number of Americans who feel ill at ease in parts of Mexico, the number of Americans that have been shaken down or hurt while they are in sketchy places in Mexico. And I don't want to paint with too broad a brush because it's a beautiful country. Many people have secondary homes there, visit there, vacation there, and it's such a beautiful place. But just taking that into account and this terrible, terrible, heinous crime that so recently occurred, and then the flow of drugs and what that cultivates not only on that side of the border, but the death and destruction and the heartache it brings to this side of the border. And there's guilt all over the place on that, but the cartels are the main facilitators. And boy, it is a clear and present danger right on our southern border.
Indeed it is. And you look, Doug, at what has happened. In the last few years alone, there have been an estimated 250,000 people killed in Mexico by the drug cartels. It's a staggering sum. And it keeps getting worse. It's gotten worse as the territorial disputes between gangs have become more prolific and more intense. And we've got, according to one figure, we've got about 100,000 American citizens who live somewhere in northern Mexico. There are tens of thousands of dual citizens who live in northern Mexico and are part of what were once referred to as the Mormon colonies, mm-hmm. who share some ancestry with, if and in many cases, are current members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Those people alone bring special interest to our state. But as I've talked to them down there, these dual citizens of the United States and Mexico, they tell me how tragic they think it is that the humanitarian crisis has gotten this bad without people in the U.S. taking notice. But they are taking notice now, and things are going to happen.
Senator, I really appreciate this conversation. Just a quick note, and you've alluded to this already. Are you convinced that the Mexican government, the authorities, are really going to do something here? And there's not only everything that we've talked about, but anybody familiar with the economy of Utah, Mexico is a huge trading partner, not only for the United States, but for the state of Utah. The stability and being able to have people comfortably and safely do business and travel back and forth, it's a huge issue. Is Mexico, in your opinion, Senator, just kind of bottom line, are they on board?
They are not, in the sense that they have not been, in the sense that they are not currently doing enough. And I have called upon them publicly. I do so again now. Please, President Lopez Obrador, do something about this. Because if you don't, you're not going to like the consequence. Look, we share a border. We share a very lengthy border. We share an economy that where two countries' economic activities are inextricably intertwined. We've got about $1.7 billion a day crossing the U.S.-Mexican border every single day. Both countries have got far too much at stake to ignore this. And so President Lopez Obrador hugs, not bullets, which has been this Mexican administration's strategy for dealing with the cartels, is not going to cut it anymore. And if you continue with this absolutely ridiculous theory that hugs, not bullets, is going to work, you're not going to like the consequence. It's going to get very, very ugly. And that's one of the few things that could harm this very important relationship that we have between the two countries. I know Mexico doesn't want that, and we don't either. And so I hope President Lopez Obrador will act in Mexico's interests by helping us get rid of these cartels.
Senator Lee, thank you so much for joining us here at KSL. And Mike, I hope you and your great family have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Thank you, Doug.
Senator Mike Lee with us here at KSL, talking about this terrible tragedy, this massacre that occurred not that long ago down in Mexico. All right, when we come back, we are going to talk about a noted national politician on the Democratic side of the aisle that is now filing to be on the ballot here in the state of Utah. We'll tell you who it is, and we'll talk with Scott Howell coming up in just a moment.
Afternoon news and in-depth coverage with Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Well, there's so many things to talk about, things that are popping in the news right now. And at the national level, we look at the election 2020 that is shaping up. And we've seen the Democrat debates. And boy, last week's debate, Scott Howell is here with me. Last week's debate kind of got buried in the impeachment issues.
And everybody, yeah, that was a nice debate. Now let's talk about impeachment. Yeah, we heard that. Now let's talk about impeachment.
But isn't it funny how one little thing can derail everything?
Oh, and it makes you wonder, you know, whether you're for the impeachment or not.
Right.
The fact is, this ought to happen very rarely, and it's a big, big deal. And no matter what, it defocuses and derails so many things that are necessary for the world and for the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think about all the challenges that we're faced right now, and it's interesting to me that all the energy can be focused on two sides not listening to each other, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's what drives me crazy. Yeah. Would you just give each other a chance to listen?
I know. Last week we talked about this over and over, and I tried to recognize that there were some other issues, but it's hard to ignore an impeachment of the United States president.
Yeah.
And this will be an impeachment. I don't think it'll be a conviction, but no. You never know.
You don't.
I labeled it this way. You have the chairman and the ranking member who are just there, you know, with their agendas. Then you have the lawyers.
Right.
Then you have the pit bulls, you know, not to mention Representative, you know, Jordan.
Right.
And there were some others on the other side. And then you have the rank and file. And then you have those who you think probably stayed up late at night trying to figure out, what am I going to say?
How do I ask that question?
Yeah, now, how do I ask that question for the 19,000th time?
And so I can get some PR.
So I can get some PR and some FaceTime. And, you know, Chris Stewart has been a friend of mine for a long time. But if I heard him say impeachapalooza one more time, I almost thought, you know, I'm a good enough friend. I ought to call him and go, shut up.
Just
don't say that anymore.
Take it down.
Yeah.
And I was really kind of disappointed in the way he spoke to Yovanovitch and to the general. That kind of bothered me because I expect more out of Chris.
You know,
to show that decorum, and you don't need to do that.
And I'll tell you, you know, I was playing a game of who do you trust, and often on, you know, they'll split the screen.
There
you have either one of the lawyers or one of the pit bulls or one of the lemmings, you know, asking the questions. And then on the other side, usually as I viewed it, on the right-hand side, you would have that seasoned ambassador. You would have that person in the military who had given all kinds of sacrifice, that career person who has devoted their life to be in harm's way and in some real sketchy situations. I mean, think of even our own, you know, John Huntsman.
Oh, yeah.
When he's over there with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
You know, and how difficult that is in uprooting their families and so on. And I thought, okay, I'm looking at this screen and I'm seeing the pit bull and I'm seeing this seasoned ambassador or seasoned, you know, and I go, who do you trust? I trust the one on the right.
I am taking that every time. And Jean Hill, Dr. Hill, could you believe her, even as she was being beat up, her emotional button never went off. She was pure, this is the way it is, this is what happened, and this is what I'm telling you.
And, you know, you mentioned Ambassador Yovanovitch, and the way they all talked about her.
Yes.
With just unquestioned respect for what she, you know, that they may not agree with everything, but her professionalism and everything else. And the thing that I asked last week, and we're going to have to take a break here, and then we'll come back for what we really were going to talk about. But, you know, why, if the president, who has the authority, we all recognize that, you serve at the pleasure of the president.
And they recognize that.
Yeah.
They all said
that. Everybody said that. And if you want to blow somebody out, blow them out. But don't degrade them and humiliate them and undermine their effectiveness and take so much away from a lifelong of public service. What's the purpose in that?
And how do we encourage kids that are coming up in the world to go be an ambassador and work for the State Department when they see that blatant just criticism? And I felt so bad for Yovanovitch when they asked her a question and she said, I don't know why the president went after me on Twitter.
Right.
I don't know why. And
I know.
My heart just wanted to say she's given everything.
I know. One quick thing on Dr.
Hill.
Hill.
Yeah.
Almost said Hall.
Yeah.
Dr. Hill, I told our producer, I said, that is the woman you never, when you're in school, you never want your science project to be next to hers. You never want to follow her with a book report. You never you want her in your study group, right. though, for sure.
And, yeah. And people who had lied on her pigtails and she puts them out and goes and scores the highest on the test. Who is that person?
I know. We will talk about some of the homeless issues, and we'll talk about a noted national politician who is now registered or set up in the state of Utah. We'll talk about that with Scott Howell here at KSL.
The afternoon insights and analysis continue. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Scott Howell is here with us in studio, and Scott, I don't know whether to be relieved or disappointed by this, but do you realize after the diatribe that you and I just had, we didn't get one hate mail?
No, that can't be true.
I'm just kind of sure? I'm kind of shocked. Maybe everybody's driving to grandma's house a day early. I'm not quite sure, but anyway,
call in on the text line, the KSL text line.
Oh, hey. See, he's bailing me out. He's bailing me out.
And tell
here.
Us what you really think.
That's right. You can leave your message on the University
Utah Credit Union.
University? No, this is Utah. I'm getting, now I'm flustered. Okay, all right. Okay.
We've had too much.
I know.
We've had too much turkey here today.
The Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line, not university. Yeah. Okay. Does that one count? We need to show behind the scenes. Our producer came in and said, Doug, you haven't mentioned our text line. I said, well, I mentioned it twice last time. She goes, that doesn't count. You have to do it this hour. So then, I got all flustered.
So send those notes in of love and appreciation.
Yes.
And delete the hate ones.
Okay. The Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line at 57500. I'm getting a thumbs up in there. All right. So, and there's still no hate mail, Scott. I don't know. I'm kind of shocked.
Your internet's down. That's all there is to it.
That's right. We need to do a refresh. There's got to be something wrong. Scott, the reason we brought you in today was because I understand that Joe Biden will officially be on the ballot here in the state of Utah now.
At about 3:30, I'll be in the lieutenant governor's office signing the official papers.
Am I going to make you late here?
No.
I'm looking at the clock.
I'm okay.
Okay.
We're great. But what an honor and a privilege for me to give back to an old friend who I've admired for so many years and who's done so much good for this country.
How did you end up being the guy?
Well, when I was first elected to the state Senate, we started a little program called the Legislative Ball. And Attorney General Jan Graham and House Minority Leader Frank Pegnanelli, we got together and we said, how can we make a big splash? And Jan said, well, I know this guy named Joe Biden. He seems pretty cool. And he'd been in the Senate. He's the youngest elected U.S. senator in the history of the country. Actually, when he got elected, he still wasn't old enough to take over. He had to wait for his birthday. Yeah. And we had him out. And, Doug, we probably raised more money and energized the Democratic base more than ever before in the history of the state of Utah. We became fast friends. His sister, Valerie Biden Owens, and I have been friends forever. When I ran against Senator Hatch, Joe was right there with me, and Joe was very frank with me. He said, Scott, I work with Orrin, and I can only tell you I will help you, but I'm not going to go out and I'm not going to blast him in ways that are not right. And he said, I'm not even going to do that, but I'll be happy to help you. Yeah. That's what kind of guy he is.
Yeah.
And I took that, and I'm just honored that they had asked me to do that. And today at 3:30, and what an exciting time in the history of the state of Utah. Super Tuesday, March 3rd.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time this has been funded, and we're going to do it. We're going to be on the map. Our votes count. Doug, it's the crossroads of the West more than one way.
You know, it's interesting you'd mention that about Joe Biden. And I've told you this story before. Some of our listeners have heard this as well. But when Senator Garn, and of course they had many things in common, tragedy, sadly,
yep.
in common, along with their Senate seats and so on. But it was interesting when Senator Garn used to do the Senator's Cup for Primary Children's Hospital. He would always, Joe Biden would be out here.
Yeah.
And several times Jake set it up so I would talk to Senator Biden from the ski slopes.
How great is that?
And it was always just very brief, you know, yeah. Senator, thank you. Right. What, and he'd talk about the good things that were happening and praise Primary Children's Hospital, praise Utah, praise our snow. And, you know, it was that kind of a conversation. But I always appreciated just how down to earth he was, easy to talk to, very friendly. And he was out here supporting Senator Garn, who is not of his party. And he was out here supporting Primary Children's, you know, Hospital, which I greatly appreciated.
And that's Joe. That is the raw, real Joe right there. You know, he's come out to Mitt Romney's event up at in Park City, participated in that.
Yeah.
And he is the guy, he's a unifier. That's the way I look at him. And I think that's why he got so along so well with Jake and with Warren. Because he knew that there were times that they didn't agree.
Sure.
But he was trying to always bridge that gap so when there are times that they did agree, they could expound on that and make it better for all the citizens.
Looking ahead to the election 2020 at the national level and especially at the presidential level, as you watch, especially on the Democratic side, we talked about this, the debate that happened last week, you know, yeah. was just buried
yeah.
in the impeachment issues. But how are you seeing things shake out?
Well, it's interesting right now. I think that there was a really hard push at the beginning to go to this far left. I think Warren, Betacek, all of those candidates were really taken in that way. But then when you ask that golden question, how are you going to pay for it? They yeah. kind of go, well, you know, maybe we have to tax 70% of income tax for everybody. Yeah, right. That's not going to fly. And I think what's happened now, they've gone back towards the middle. And I think Amy Klobuchar, Senator Klobuchar from Minnesota, I think even Andrew Yang to a degree moved back to the center. But Joe really is the leader on it. He is definitely the one that understands. He understands the Medicare. He understands the health care issues. And he is all about equal justice. His position on firearms is the one that I think is the moderate position that everyone can support. And I look at him, and that's the way he's always been, though, from the first time I've ever met him. He's always seen things from the center right or center left or right down the middle. And, you know, Joe is he's a guy who you just described. He'd come up and give you his coat. I mean, he really would. Yeah. And then he'd be happy to assist you to do something else. He's a caring guy. You know, one of the things that has come out, and this is kind of a little bit of the elephant in the room, but people have said, well, is he healthy? Is he all there? Linda and I spent 45 minutes with him in a private setting 2 months ago up in Park City. I can tell you Joe is as spot on as any candidate there is, any candidate. He stutters, though. We had Valerie, his sister, out here, and we did a women's leadership thing, and she talked about when he was 3 or 4, he started this stuttering.
Hmm.
And sometimes it affects him when he's up on the stage. And if you saw the last debate, there was just one instance where they was trying to get out a S word, and he stuttered a little bit. And I think people get that mixed up with, well, is he all there? And she talked about his life growing up and how he overcame this, and a lot of people don't know that, but The Atlantic just did an in-depth article about that. And he said, yes, I've been a stutterer my whole life. And that to me even shows that he's more human.
Yeah.
It does, Doug. You know, what thing is wrong with me or, you know, some idiosyncrasy that I have? And sometimes I think it's refreshing to have candidates and leaders who are human beings.
Do you know what I appreciate about Joe Biden? And he and I have differences politically, but he is prone to gaffes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the way he handles them, it is just – I love it when he'll be giving, you know, a comment – and all of a sudden, you know, at one time, I can't remember what he said, but it implied something kind of dubious about his wife. And all of a sudden, his wife is kind of grinning, people on the back row, and all of a sudden it dawns on Joe how that could have been interpreted. And he starts to laugh. And I thought, oh, good for him. Good for him.
Well, I was in a meeting the other day, and I called our good friend Professor Richard Davis, one of the smartest people in the world. I was introducing him. I called him the infamous.
The infamous.
And Richard looked at me like,
what?
And I went, Wait, let me correct that.
Yeah, let's. I do it all the time, too. And to tell you the truth, I find that somewhat endearing. Very quickly, speaking of an elephant in the room, but in this case, it's a donkey in the room. What about Bloomberg?
Oh, boy. I'll tell you what, Doug. This, have you seen his commercials?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're powerful. And if you take that Trump voter that wanted to have the independence of the self-made man, the richest guy in the world is going to take a dollar for his salary and he's going to pay for his own campaign, that's going to have some appeal where people go, well, that's who I want. I mean, that's Trump-itis a little bit in saying those type of things. But I'll tell you, he accomplished some great things, and he who has the gold, you know what happens sometimes.
I know, sometimes makes the rules. You know, and I just saw a fairly interesting commercial. It was Tom 2020.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's an interesting ad
another
as
one.
Well.
Yeah, and Tom, he doesn't quite have the personality of you in the
right,
debate.
Right, right.
It was really kind of, here. Okay, I'm going to blink. No, I'm not going to blink.
You know, it's always so much fun to chat with you. And one just quick note on, because I know this is such a focus of yours before we take a break, but the homeless. And a lot of things now are in place. Things are really moving. Having been so anxiously engaged in this now for years at the epicenter of it all, are you confident things are going in the right direction? And especially as we go into the holiday season, that our homeless friends, as Pamela always says, are being taken care of?
Doug, I really appreciate the question. Last night I was down at Rio Grande. I was driving home. I went over there. The other side Academy was moving all the furniture out of the road home. They're putting it in their big van. So you have one resource center and the other one. One closing, one thriving. And I talked, there were about five people that came out of St. Vinny's, and there were about eight people over at the Wigan Center. So Timothy, I just was walking and I went over and introduced myself, and he glowingly talked about the new shelter. He glowingly talked about the shower curtains that were there and the dignity he has felt. And he glowingly talked about how good it was to get back on his feet. And the good news for me, he was even so excited about changing his life. I took him over to the Other Side Academy, and they had him sit on his bench to see if he can qualify. Doug, I am confident that we have lots of work left to do. But I'm more confident that this Thanksgiving time, we should all be grateful for those leaders, the visionary leaders who said, we need three new resource centers, and we are going to take care better of our homeless than we've ever done it before. This morning I got a report from the men's shelter that there was beds available there. Yeah. We're moving women into housing. We continue to improve and do upgrades. Is there work to do? Is it mission accomplished? No. But, Doug, I am 110% confident to say everything that we've accomplished thus far is a billion times better than it was in the past.
Scott, I so appreciate you joining us, and I hope as we move into Thanksgiving, you'll give my best to Linda and your great family, and thank you for all the great things you do, and have a great, great holiday season.
Doug, I couldn't ask for a better friend over the years, and I'm so thankful and grateful. You know, sometimes I wonder how my life ever got to where it was. I'm just just a kid from a skyline, and I am so thankful. I really am for people who've been such great influence on my life, and you are one of those. I think about your family situation, and I know we went through some pretty tough time, but you know what? There's angels up there that are around you, Doug, and thank you for being who you are, the voice of reason.
Oh, that's really kind of you. Scott, thank you, and a happy Thanksgiving. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to share some of the voicemails that have come in. And don't forget that our Utah Community Credit Union KSL text line is still available. Hey, we have one new message there. It's available for you at 57500.
Afternoon news and in-depth coverage with Doug Wright on KSL News Radio.
Well, it's been great to have you along on the program today, and this is going to be tomorrow. We're turning things over to the sports guys, Unrivaled. They're going to be here. They're going to be taking a look at all of the ins and outs of all of the various games and everything coming up over the Thanksgiving weekend. So from myself, from my family, we wish all of you a very, very happy Thanksgiving. And then I'll see you back here on Friday, of course, on the movie show. And then don't forget, on we believe it'll be the 11th of December. That's where Lee Lonsberry will be taking over this time slot. But it's been a lot of fun to spend this time with you. And it's a real privilege for me to keep the seat warm for my friend Lee. Let's just play some of the comments that have come in on our phone message line on our I always get that confused. Text message line is 57500. And then, of course, our line where you can leave a message, that is always 575-7668. So let's go to the first one. And this person said, I'm now a never Trumper. Listen to this.
I've been a lifelong Republican. And when Mitt Romney said that he was a never Trumper, I kind of fell into that category as a never Trumper. And I see the country going in the wrong direction because of that. And if Republicans continue to hitch their wagon to Donald Trump as a never-Trumper Republican, I'm going to become a never-Republican.
Interesting comment. And this, of course, is in light of the survey that we saw that shows that almost 60% of people feel the country is going in the wrong direction. And in the state of Utah, it's kind of a flip-flop opposite when it comes to the state going in the right direction. This person said, yeah, we're in the wrong direction.
I'm a United States veteran, and we're going in the wrong direction, okay? As long as you put principles first and vote by principle, you'll go in the right direction. Donald Trump is usurping his constitutional duties. Congress has an obligation to hold him to that. Impeachment was written in there. It's like getting fired from a job. It's not like you're killing somebody. You're just firing them from their job and letting the next guy take his place. And there's provisions in the Constitution to do that.
This person also, and we are taking this absolutely as they came. We have done no filtering here. This person, too, feels that we're going in the wrong direction.
So, to be frankly honest, I think this country is going in the wrong direction. I think this president, it's like a reality show I'm watching. I've never seen any of the presidents perform the way he does. I don't like his Twitter that constantly, sometimes it leaves me speechless, which is kind of hard to do. I don't know. Again, it just leaves me speechless. I just have never seen a president act so unpresidential.
And very quickly, just a final comment about Republicans circling the wagons.
The country's going in the wrong direction. Republicans are circling their wagon around the cause of so much division and what's wrong with this country. They need to put their principles first ahead of their party and their president. Impeachment's there to take out somebody who's doing a bad job, and Trump is doing that.
Thank you so much for your comments on the comment line, and it's been a fun show today. Thank you for being along. Jeff Kaplan is coming up next, and again, from the Wright family, have a very, very happy Thanksgiving.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless. And I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.